Hi, you guys.
Hi.
I'm going to do something different than I've ever done before in AA. I'm not going to introduce myself because I want you to decide for yourself whether you really love me by the end of this, okay? So we're going to... All right?
We love you, man.
And I also don't like pelvic thrusts. Oh, I'm a top.
I'm already decided.
No pelvic thrusts. And all of you stand up and turn around and bend over and we'll be all right. There we go. Now I'm feeling the love. Okay. So, in my community, we have lots of names for ourselves. I'm what I call a trans butch. I don't know how many people out there identify with that, but it's not an outside issue. My gender and my sex desires, just like yours, are a huge part of my life. They're a huge part of my drinking, and they're a huge part of my recovery, and they're completely linked with my my sexuality is completely linked with my spirituality. It's how I interact with you guys. It's the way we flirt and let each other know that we're okay. This is like exactly who I am. So I really think there are very few outside issues. When we get into politics, maybe that's when it happens. But so they call me Papa Butch, and I'm here to just like wrap you up in a blanket right now. That's what I feel like, because I know a lot of you are really tired. You stayed up late last night, and you like got a bunch of spirituality by talking to each other and dancing and you've been doing that all weekend long, and you know, maybe some of you even wore your bathrobes, I don't know. And I think that love is a huge part of what we do here. It's true, I can't love you into sobriety. And love is a big word, right? Like, words are weird. They encompass so many different meanings, and we learn that in AA, like, you know, every coin has two sides, you know. Easy does it, but do it, right? Like, so how can you do both, right? Love is one of those kind of words, I think. It's something, you know, it's something like we heard in the speaker last night say, you know, his mother was like loving him to death, right? That I'm not gonna do. I'm not gonna give my sponsees money. You know, I'm not gonna caretake them. I'm not going to carry them on my back. I'm going to carry them the message, right? They're my pigeons, and I love that word, even though I've heard people say that's disrespectful. You know, I've heard people say they call people pigeons because they shit on you later. I mean, that's a really negative way to look at your pigeons. For me, my pigeons are like, they're carrier pigeons, man. I see myself like ghost dog up on the, you know, the roof in the city, and my pigeons come to me, they've got a message, and I'm giving them a message to carry off somewhere. They're fucking carrier pigeons, they're not. Anyway, carrying the message, right? I'm really grateful to the speakers that came before me here this weekend, because they all swore their asses off, and now I don't have to worry about that, because all of the tapes are ruined, and I'm just gonna step right in there and ruin mine too. You don't have to have a clean mouth in here. And in fact, I brought my big book for security. It's the old third edition, and I just kind of opened it up, and it said, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. Right? That's my real purpose. And there are things that, you know, we walk in here and we're swearing, we've been in the bars, we're over-sexual, we're smoking cigarettes, and to tell you the truth, I always want to be that old-timer who's standing outside with the people fucking smoking. I know I'll probably, I may die of that, right? But miraculously, as people know, I kind of smoke at night and socially, which is like unheard of, right? So I've cut back a lot, I've like improved a lot, right? And this is what this is what the big book tells us. We're trying to improve. We are not saints, right? That's what I love. I love the slogan for this. I love the way it fits. We are not saints, and my story is not about reaching sainthood. It's a little bit funny even to me that I'm like the spiritual speaker possibly on Sunday morning, right? Because I'm the person who came in here and I didn't even really have, I couldn't believe in a higher power. There are a lot of people from my little community, gay people, queer people, we have a hard time with a higher power when we come in here. And that's also part of my message, right? We have a hard time with a higher power because that higher power has been really hard on us. Like, really hard on us. Like, I'm never going to tell one of my sponsees to go back to church. That's ridiculous. The church often has told us that we, in fact, continues to tell us that we don't belong, that we can't be who we are. And my story, unfortunately, that pressure from the world has really, I think, held me up. I do not regret the past or my past in AA because it's given me this stronger message that I have today. But I tried a long time, not in AA, not to be exactly who I am. It took me really till I came here 10 years ago, till I came here to Salt Lake City, and I really embraced like who I am. Like, and that's a mysterious thing because we change all the time. That's the other thing that's really weird about who I am. Who the fuck are we, right? We change all the time. And one of the amazing things about this path in AA is that it tells us we're going to change. We have to change. If we're going to grow and be a bigger spiritual person, we're going to change. And you hear that from the old timers sitting up here who were all your age when they got sober, right? And some of them younger. All of us are telling you that we've had to change in AA. Maybe even at 17 years of sobriety, we had to change again. I had like 20-something years of sobriety when I came here to Salt Lake, and I thought that I had changed an awful lot, but when I came to Salt Lake, I was married to the third man, AA guy. Three times I married AA guys. I'm like queer as a tuna, you know, whatever. I mean, people are telling me all the time, are you sure you're not gay? As you know, and I never hid, really. I had come out when I was 19, and I never hid that. I would share that in my story, but as I would share it, I would feel so confused. Like, is it okay? Is it okay? And it wasn't okay. It wasn't okay. Society was telling me I was getting sober in a small town, and there was nobody else around that was gay, and definitely nobody else that was genderqueer that was like not either male or female, right? So what? Let me talk to you about spirituality, and I'm going to start with bathrooms because that's where I start with my spirituality. Okay. Before you speak, you need to get in touch with that small voice like we heard last night, right? Beyond the timpanis, beyond the violins, there's some little like oboe voice or flute voice that's going, PJs, share the truth, you know what I mean? Like underneath all that shit, right? So what I really believe and what I was taught in AA is that, you know, I have to tell what's in my heart. And that changes every time I speak. I don't have some like rote memorized thing or anything. I come up here and it's totally fucking scary because I have no idea what I'm gonna say to you. I'm hoping my higher power speaks through me and that I learn from what I say too, right? I'm gonna vocalize that small voice. I'm trying at least. Hopefully it's not gonna be blocked up by a bunch of fear. I'm just gonna let out that small voice and it's gonna come out of my mouth even. You're gonna hear that small voice, right? That's really, really a scary place to be. Like we heard last night, we want these like adamant rules. That's why we have religion, to give us these rules so we can follow it and know that we're okay. But what I've learned in AA and what you've heard from all the speakers here is that there's a small voice and it's telling you to do like wacky fucking stuff. You know, like, I got up this morning and it was like, oh, you gotta look respectful, so put on your jacket and your nice shirt, right? And oh, my ties are packed because I'm about to move. God damn it, you know? And then the small voice says, no, you're not one of those mainstream people. it. You know? So it was like, put on your goddamn shorts. Wear your shorts with it, you know? And then it was like, oh, but, you know, and I'm, what shoes should I wear? So I put on my high tops, right? And I'm like, oh, God, I look like freaky here, and my clothes don't even match. And that's my small voice. I don't know. It's all fucked up. It's telling me to do all these different, right? So, but that's, but I came, but I'm here, and I'm more me than I would have been if I had, like, just looked totally put together at 29 years of sobriety. But, like, let me tell you. And I'm Dr., call me Dr. PJ, because I now have a fucking PhD, you know, like, Dr. Bob, Dr. PJ. I have a PhD now, you know. No, I'm some kind of weird outsider, and I always have been. I always have been. It's why I kind of don't want you to do the chant, right? Right? Because I'm the person who was sitting in the back of the room, like, freaked out by that chant, because sometimes those chants, to certain ears, they sound like high school pep rally, right? And somebody like me at a high school pep rally, I'm just waiting to get thrown in the trash can, right? Or like, swirly time, pep rally, get PJ, you know? I mean, like, it really means something different to some people, right? So, I mean, I love it. I love that you guys, I love the exuberance, I have to say it. But also remember when you're doing that, the quiet guy in the back or the quiet girl in the back who's going to have a really hard time with that, right? And so do some talking with those people about, like, okay, because everybody I've ever picked for a friend in AA was you guys, the exuberant young people, right? I was young, but I was really scared when I came in, and I didn't know who I was, and it wasn't okay to be gay in the crowd I was in, and at the time, it, you know, thank God the exuberant people have always drawn out this kind of, I love you guys. I really do. You know, I mean, and I'm not just chanting it at you. I really do love you guys. That love isn't going to get you drunk, I hope. It's going to get you to feel a compassion. Like, it's going to get you to open up and crack open inside. Right? That's what's happened to me in sobriety. I've just cracked open to you guys, you know? And I want to give you what I've got, but I know I can't. You know, what makes you get beyond that huge pool of 5 years into the, like, 7 years, into the 10 years, you know, into the 20 fucking 9 years, whatever. How are you going to get there? You know, you're going to have to crack open, man. I'm sorry to tell you. You know, you're going to have to change over and over again. You're going to maybe get married and get divorced. You're going to have kids. You're going to fuck them up. You're going to... You heard it all. You heard it all here this weekend, you know? We are like the people that cheered for you here. We are the beacons. We were with you. We were you. And now we're like standing up the road and we have a little lantern, right? We're trying to shine and say, you can get here. And if you get here, you have no idea how amazing it can be. How amazing it can be. Okay, back to bathrooms here. So, because I'm supposed to share from my heart, the early people said to me, go in the bathroom before you share, right? Get down on your fucking knees, even if, like we were talking before, Angel was talking about kneeling down in the piss, you know, if you're at like a clubhouse or something. You get down on your knees and you ask your higher power to just speak through you, right? And then you have to let it go, because it may be a fucking flop. It may be a flop what you share, you know, or it may be something that helps somebody, or it may be something you need to hear yourself, but you can't go in there with all the rules in your head or some pre-planned thing. You got to let the spirit come through you. When the spirit comes through me, I often cry. Like, I feel it moving, and I can't help it, I cry. So I'm in the bathroom, and thank God, you know, my higher power protects me, because when you're a trans butch like me, it's a really common experience, at least once a month. I go into a bathroom. I have to pick, right? Like, there's the guy with the pants on and the little girl with the skirt. Like, which fucking bathroom should I go into, right? If I go in with the guys, I mean, I'm going to have a little bit of a hard time with the urinals. I admit it. You know, if I... kind of a shock for the guy standing next to me. if I go in the girls' room once a month, Once a month, I swear to God, some woman says, oh shit, you're in the wrong bathroom. Or they, like, really, you know, quietly, like, go, oh, I'm in the wrong bathroom. And they go, like, running out, you know? Or some guy, happened in Vegas, believe it or not, outside the bathroom, like, puts his hand on my shoulder and says, fucking lesbian, what are you doing outside the girl's bathroom? Or bathrooms are like a huge issue for me, right? They are. Like, you realize what your privilege is, that you don't have to fucking worry about that every day, right? Or I go into a gas station and somebody says to me, sir, you know, and they're talking to me, sir, and but the first few words that come out of my mouth are usually low enough because I smoke so much that they think I'm a sir, and then maybe 5 minutes into the conversation, they realize I'm not a sir. And so then they either do one of two things. They either, like, ma'am the death out of me, right, which I hate. I'd rather be called sir, actually, myself. But, you know, or they look at me like I was trying to deceive them, right? We only have two choices in this world, and that's really hard. That's really hard. For those of us who kind of just don't fit in there. I don't feel like I'm just talking to that person when I talk to you guys, though, because what I know from sponsoring so many people, a lot of girls who are straight, some guys that are gay, you know, what I know is that inside, like, we were all born, right? We were all born, like, we had no gender, man. But right away, they either put that little blue or pink thing on us, and we had to start fitting into some kind of box. But nobody's really there in that box, and we're really uncomfortable with it. Guys are really uncomfortable with it. And one of the things we learn here that's so powerful is, like, that it's so moving when that big guy comes up here and you tell him you love him, and he can't even talk. And he's, like, tears in his eyes, and he just had to hit his chest, right? Like, that guy is feeling his heart break open, right? He's, like, ultra masculine, you would think, but what I'm seeing when I'm looking at him is that little boy, right? That little boy before he picked up a drink, who's, like, feeling something he hasn't felt in since he was a kid, right? He's feeling accepted for who he is, right? He can't help it, he's so big and tall, right? Us butches and big guys, when we cry, it means something, and you guys feel it, right? Because we're not supposed, that isn't traditional masculinity, right? So the bathroom stuff I got out of the way. Here's the second thing about spirituality that I learned in AA, and it's about ashtrays. So really, these are important things, man. I mean, really. So I come in, I'm a smoker, right? Of course, like many of us, and we smoke outside the meeting, and this, you know, the somebody finally said, you know, at the podium, they were like, hey, you know, we're going to lose our place here if we keep leaving these butts scattered around, you know. They say things like, you're the only big book some people may see, and they're these religious people who are, like, allowed us to be in their basement, and, you know, we got to pick these butts up, so... One of my, you know, the early sponsors was kind of saying, and there were a lot of people that kind of helped sponsor me in the beginning, I'll tell you why, but in a minute, but, you know, kind of said, you don't have a job in AA, and service work is what's going to keep you sober. In the kind of renegade area of upstate New York where I got sober, there weren't a lot of conferences, and there weren't a lot of opportunities to do big work, DCMs, blah, 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 all those, like, initials. So we had to find our service work, and often it was something like, pick up the fucking cigarettes. And so that's what, you know, or empty the freaking ashtrays, because we were all smoking in the meeting, believe it or not. And so I, you know, learned to just, like, bend down and pick up the cigarettes. And even when I would quit, they would say, you still have to pick up the cigarettes. I'm sorry, you got to pick up the cigarettes. You got to empty the ashtrays, right? So this was, like, a way of learning. It's kind of like putting on nice clothes when you come up front, right? It was a way of learning, like, this, you know, this is beyond me. This is beyond only my little desires and my coolness. You know, because when I came in, I was a leather jacket wearing cool dyke, right? And it was beyond being cool anymore. It's like, get out of your fucking self and start doing something for somebody else. And quietly, do it quietly. So my favorite job in AA, and I've done it for years, I love doing it, is making coffee. So, like, go home and get a coffee-making job from here, right? This is what, nobody knows you're doing it. They're all complaining about how shitty you are at it. You know, the cookies are no good. You know, nobody ever thanks you. You know, you're the one who's setting up all the chairs. I learned, like, at 20, you know, early in my early 20s, how to set up one of those big freaking church tables by yourself. You get it up on end, you put your foot against it, and you wing it up with the legs out, and it lands on its feet. And you can set up a whole room and not nick up the floor just by yourself. I learned that stuff, and everything I know, honestly, I learned in AA. Because I got sober so young. You're going to be one of those people, too. You know, everything you know about life. Today, I go to poetry readings because I'm a literature person. That's what I got my PhD in. I'm a writer, right? Today, I go to those poetry readings. Everybody's, like, super cool, like, you know, cool, like, you know, poetry reading, you know. Somebody should have a bongo in the background or something. And then afterwards, you know, that person just shared their poetry from their heart, right? And everybody just is like so too cool, you know, to like go over. What I learned in AA is you always go thank the speaker. Always go thank the speaker. That's what they told me. I don't care how embarrassed you are. You do not have to spend 15 minutes talking to them. You just say thank you because you're like humble and you walk away, you know. That's what I love about the part that you guys do where you keep yelling seven during the steps. That makes me want to cry, man. I'm telling you, there's a wisdom in that. There is a really deep wisdom in that, that you keep yelling seven. And what I love even more is when you go shh afterwards. That is so deep. I don't even know if you guys realize how deep you're being, right? But it's so beautiful. It's that hushing voice. Don't be yourself. Don't yell out, you know. Seven, shh, oh my God, it's like awesome. Oh, I love it. It's the best part of these meetings, I have to say. Yeah, I love it, man. And that, and humility is a huge thing. You know, it's part of that breaking open that happens to us in AA, is that we realize we're not who we thought we were. We're not the big shit we thought we were. The world is not revolving around me. You know, and if it is, I better start making it look like it's not and take the coffee making job and pick up cigarette butts because I have to stay right sized. I have to stay just a person among people, like equal to you guys, always. You know, if I thought that that I was going to get sober and stay sober for this length of time and have those same people around me that I got sober with. Like, look around you, you know, you have these buddies right now. I had buddies when I came in here really young, and very few of them are still around. And when we did that countdown, how many people were in their 20 years of sobriety, right? Like, there were, like, so few. I think there were, like, four if you really counted it, you know, and then that one woman who was amazing with 40-something. But very few, right? So if those were the only people I was still talking to, I'd be up shit creek, you know? I mean, what I learned is it's who's here now that's helping me. And so I keep going to meetings, and if it's a whole group of new people and all my friends disappear, it breaks my heart. It does. It breaks my heart that they disappear, they drink, they die, whatever. But you are the people who are here now. This is AA now. You know, the guy was talking last night about some old-timer who was, like, ragging on AA, you know. I have this weird experience that happened when I was maybe 10 or 11 years sober. I went for the first time to, like, a big book kind of intensive. I'd always kind of avoided those because I don't really like meetings where there's one person who's kind of giving their wisdom to the rest of the group, you know, and they're all learning or something, right? I've always been kind of like, I don't know about that. So I tried it this one time, and one of the good things that came out of it, you know, I can always find something good, like they say, out of a meeting. One of the good things that came out of it was they were talking about the 11th step, and they came forward with this sheet that said, and they said, like, this is apparently, supposedly, the way the first guys did the 11th step. And you know, this was really enlightening. It was really beautiful. It said, you know, settle down in a place, relax as much as you can. Imagine your higher power is here in the room with you. And imagine a kind of higher power that really loves you, that's really invested in you and personally may do something for you in your life even, right? And now start writing, like a kind of automatic writing. Let that voice come out on the page. Ask it some questions and let that voice come out on the page, right? And so, you know, and it said, you're going to hear really weird, goofy things. So I remember the first time, I'm like married at the time, and we're having all these arguments and everything. And I'm like, holy shit, what should I say? What should I do? This is like, seems like such a big problem. And I relax, and I'm trying to imagine this higher power around me. And I start writing, and it's like, out of my pen comes this like pink tutu. And like, I'm not wearing a fucking pink tutu. I'm sorry. That's like not my style. And I could kind of picture him in one. Maybe he needed to wear one. I don't know. That doesn't make any sense to me. So then next thing I do, I'm writing like about this like blue convertible, right? This like old timey 50s blue convertible. I don't know what the hell I'm writing. And it says, just like, let it come through you, right? What I ended up doing pretty much was laughing, right? I got in touch with like a lightness. And the answer to that huge argument was to fucking lighten up. You know, just like imagine him in a pink tutu and me driving along in that nice, you know, I didn't even know at that point like what was going to be happening with us, that when we moved here to Salt Lake, I was going to be sitting in my favorite home group meeting, which is a mixed medium. When I say mixed, I mean there are lots of breeders there, you guys that are straight. And like, you know, I'm sitting in that meeting and my husband at the time is sitting across and I'm doing what I've always been taught to do. I have to share from my heart, right? And I'm really confused this morning. I'm sitting there and I'm like, what am I feeling? And it comes around to me and out of my mouth I say, you guys, I don't feel like a woman. And the whole room gets like really quiet, right? And my husband's standing across, they're like looking at me, they're looking at him, you know. Everybody's really loving in AA, and that love is there. It is important, right? People are looking at us, and they're kind of like, holy shit, what's happening in front of our eyes, right? I don't know what's happening. He doesn't know what's happening, and I'm getting in touch with something, right? And people come over, and they hug me, and they hug him, and over the next week or two, we start discussing things, and I realize, like, I came into AA gay, and I really tried hard. I thought I had to join the mainstream, and where I was in this small town, some of you are going home to small towns maybe tonight, and where I was, I thought to join the mainstream, I had to shut that shit down. I really did. So, I mean, I was going 90 meetings a night. I was doing everything they're suggesting, right? And I'm sponsoring people and everything, but I shut that part of my heart down because I thought I had to. AA didn't really tell me I had to. I have to tell you that. Nobody ever balked. You don't want to do your chicken sound. Nobody ever balked when I said stuff about my past, because I would share from the podium about my past. You know, I'd been gay, you know, but now I wasn't. That's what I was thinking, right? Somehow I wasn't anymore, but I used to be. And I don't know, you know, like, no, but I had shut it down on my own. I shut myself down. I mean, some of you may be doing that in some area of your life, right? But around 17 years of sobriety, you're not going to be able to do it anymore if you're working a good program. You're going to be cracked open, man. It's hard to know that's in your future. But I have to tell you that the cracked open thing, it's not as bad as it sounds. It's like, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's making me a more real person, right? It's making me carry the message better to you. Because one of the big things AA does for us is we hear each other's hearts. That's how we get sober, right? We have so much in common because we drank alike, right? That we hear that honesty in each other's voices, and that's what clicks. That's what we love about AA. These are my people, right? I don't have to become a saint to get over this huge, scary death that's right in front of me. Like we were talking about last night, this fatal illness that we have. When I, at the bottom of my drinking, I was in New York City. I grew up in this small town in Ohio, right? And at about 18 or so, I go off to New York City, and I start to hit my bottom. And it was a scary thing. I was drinking. I was trying to come out. which was terrifying. If you ever have that happen to you, it's a very scary feeling. You want to keep saying, no, this can't be true, right? But then what were those feelings that I had for the minister's wife, you know? Why was I like, right? Like, what was that going on? You know, why do I like to just like watch women put on their makeup, man? You know, or smell them. What is that about, right? What is that, right? And it's really scary to come out. And your whole world turns upside down. You know, you're like, whoa, what does this mean? What is this going to mean? What do I have to be like then, right? And you try to find some box to put yourself in. And that doesn't work. And, man, it's wild stuff. So, you know, that being cracked open really is, I've found it to be, I am afraid of it. I have to say, I go into it. Sorry about this, man. You got to drag me in there, you know. This is what I mean about we don't have to be saints. If you're working a program and you have friends around you and you've got a sponsor, maybe you're sponsoring people, life on life's terms will drag you in there, right? It's going to take you to the next place. And you don't have to go willingly. You don't. You can drag your heels the whole way. And I do that a lot. Right now I'm doing that. It's part of the tears, partly too, are about the fact that I'm leaving here. I have some really, really good friends. Oh, man. And it's hard to leave a place. You know, I have a really nice house a friend in AA helped me get. Who's a real estate broker, and you know, I had to sell it. I have to sell it. I have to let it go. I love this place. It's got a garden I work in. I just love it, right? Got to sell it. Got to move on, because I got that fucking PhD that I was dragging my heels about. It took me 10 years. I'm so slow. I thought I was like the, you know, the genius of the class when I was in high school. I had so much arrogance. I thought I was like so much smarter than everybody. Didn't matter that I was flunking out, because like I knew I was smarter than you anyway, right? I didn't have to prove it. Like, you know, I don't care about your fucking A's. You know, I don't have to prove anything. When I went back to school, you know, I was a different person. I was sober in AA. And it went really slow. It took me 10 years here in Salt Lake. And maybe I was dragging my heels. It took a little bit longer because I knew I was going to have to leave and go on into this new phase of my life where I'm really, really a grown-up. I have to go teach kids, you know, in Dayton. And I'm like their diversity. I'm their diversity person. So they've always had, like, you know, people that were racially diverse. This is the first year. It's a Catholic college. It's amazing that they had the balls to ask a gay person, you know, let alone genderqueer person, right, to go be their diversity person. So I'm going to be talking to these kids from Ohio, like that's where I grew up, in a small town in Ohio. Although I have to say I'm from Cleveland, the Cleveland area. And so we thought we were pretty savvy up there, and we never went south of Akron, you know, where AA started. We never went south of there. And I'm going to be way south of there in this kind of like really podunky kind of area where guys are in pickup trucks and, you know, and they've maybe never met a gay person, you know. It's going to be, I'm dragging my fucking heels. I do not want to go. You know, it's too big for me. It's too big of a calling. I keep saying to my higher power, this is too fucking big, you know. You know, send Char. You know, she's like, if any of you know Char, man, she's bigger than me. She's like, she does like, if I said cement work, she'd be so pissed. It's, what's the other name for cement? It's
concrete.
Yeah. Concrete, yeah. She's a concrete worker. Like, fuck the cement, right? I don't know why, but there's a big difference, and you should all learn that right now. But anyway, she's a concrete worker, and she's like, oh, she's one of my most closest friends here. It's probably the first real butch friend I've had in AA. And been part of my ability to embrace that about myself is to watch her fucking courage. Like, she's from southern Utah, you know? She's like, fuck you if you don't like me. She has this laugh that, like, fills the room, you know? send her, you know? Like, what the fuck are you sending? I'm such a crybaby, don't send me. Oh, my God. Oh, somebody gave me a tissue. How sweet. Was that you, Kathy? Yeah. Yeah. Kathy is one of my really good friends here, too, that's really hard to let go of. Kathy spoke the first night for you guys here. We call her Kathy fucking McCabe. Okay, you now know why, because you heard her speak. But when I went and had my chest surgery, which was here, and maybe like, I don't know, 5 years ago or something, I was really scared. Another one of those instances where I was like, I feel this is really important for me, you know, to make my body match a little bit more what's going on in my mind and what's going on in my spirit. I'm sharing this with you, and it's not something I've ever shared from a podium before, I don't think. Maybe once with my gay group. But so I made that decision, you know, to do that. And I've never been in the hospital before. I've never had any kind of surgery before. I've been really healthy, thank God, you know. And I was really afraid. So Shar says to me, you know, you're going to fucking have to just get in this. She said, faith is when you know, you may see somebody walking on a tightrope, right? And they're pushing a wheelbarrow, and you're like, what the hell? They're like walking on a tightrope between buildings, and they're pushing this fucking wheelbarrow. What is, wow, that's amazing. Well, I believe they can do that. I couldn't do it, but I believe they could. Like faith, she said, is you say, I'm going to get in that wheelbarrow, and I'm going to let my higher power push me across that tightrope. And I'm terrified. You know, I know I can't do it myself. I can't walk across like that guy who's been practicing at the park, you know, busking. I'm going to have to get in the wheelbarrow and let him fucking push me. You know, that is a terrifying feeling. And she said, you got to get in the wheelbarrow, man. Just let him push you. And I thought to myself, who do I need there with me to, like, so that I can do this, so I can be courageous like this? And right away I thought of my sister. Well, I have a sister that I feel this way about because I did a 9-step, right? I shared my character defects. I talked to my family about the things that I'd done to wrong them. And we've talked that over. She's seen my progress. She loves me exactly who I am, right? And so I say, you know, I need my sister there for sure. And then I was like, damn, but like, what's going to give me the courage, right? What's going to give me the courage is somebody who says, fucking PJ, get in the fucking wheelbarrow, right? What are you doing? You know, get in there. And so I'm like, McCabe, right? I got to get Kathy. So it was really, you know, we were friends, but it was like a pretty wildly intimate thing to go with a friend in AA into that situation and have her like, I had to take my fucking shirt off at one point, and she saw it all. And, you know, I mean, it was like very close to the chest, right? Literally, right? And I had a friend in AA that I could do that with. I had somebody in AA that I knew would love me enough, that whatever her beliefs are about that and whatever your beliefs are about that, she didn't care. She wants me to be sober and to come more and more into my own self. And so she was there for me, man. She afterwards, you know, I should just say I went to go in for the surgery, and they were like, wow, you're like pretty calm about this. And do you want to like ride on the gurney back there? You know, are you kind of nervous? And I was like, no, I can walk back there. Because I'm getting in the wheelbarrow. And the doctor was like, what? You know, like I said, well, you know, the tightrope thing, you're the guy who's going to push me in the wheelbarrow. And they were like, whatever, okay, good. You know, I came out of that whole thing, and I was, you know, and Kathy was there, and my sister was there. Kathy brought me home, and we pulled up to the driveway, and I'm feeling really, like, scared, you know, just scared about the fact that I'd just been through a lot, right? And I wasn't sure how I was going to deal with it. And she said, okay, get out of the fucking car. She's at the curb. I was like, I have to walk in from here. Yeah, get on, walk in, you can do it. So I did. I just walked into the house, right? It was like that. Those are the people that give me courage, right? You guys give me that courage. And we need all kinds of people. We need the people that just say, get in there and do it. Get off your fucking ass, you know? And we need those kind of older timers, right? And we, you know, pick up a drink if you don't know what you're doing. Go have a drink and then come back to me. You know, we need those people, right? But we also need, and I always saw this from the very beginning, there really are many different kinds of old timers. Don't let anybody tell you that's old time AA. Because that isn't all that old time AA was. I mean, I was there, you know, there were guys, and these were the guys that I decided, I want to be that kind of guy, right? There were guys that were always so loving, man, that no matter what I said, they would come over to me. It's always the old guys that came over to me. I have to tell you, I would share about, you know, like how my sexual life, and like, I became almost like, well, there was actually a point in New York City where a person who I was involved with said, you know, you're low on cash, man. And I know a guy who is pretty odd, and he's never had sex before, and he needs somebody to show him how to do it, and you can make some cash. So I was getting to this point, right, where I was like doing anything. I was doing anything that I had to do, you know, to survive. I don't know how I got on that one, but man, I'm really shit. This is just like, I don't know why this stuff is coming out of me, but I'm just telling you, you know, who I am. I'm trying to be who I really am, so you hear it, right? And so you don't feel like you're the worst person in the room, or the best person in the room, or, you know, different in any way. I mean, you can be really, really different in here. I wish I had known that. I wish I had known that it would have been okay to be different right from the beginning. I can't regret that past, and many things happen because you know, that are powerful, you know, amazing things. When I was about 15 to 17 years sober, I guess it was, I'm hanging out with my guy friends. Guys loved me. You know, guys loved me because I can go shoot hoops with them. They're, you know, I can, like, hang out with them. So I never had any problems getting guys when I was trying to be straight. What's that?
You could check out chicks together.
Yeah, we could check out chicks together kind of thing, even though they kind of didn't know I was doing it, but they kind of... Yeah, so I'm hanging out with this guy, Stretch. He's like, you know, 6'7". We're shooting hoops together. And we've been doing these AA campouts together. This is where I get my spirituality, right? I would go to the spiritual retreats. I would go to these campouts with people. And there's a closeness that happens when you're sitting around a campfire and you're sharing. People bring their kids. And at the time, I was so young that all the kids were really attracted to me. So I have this, like, you know, this, like, group of kids around me, and I'm, like, being real with them, and they love that, you know. And one of these little kids is especially attracted to me, and I don't know why. You know, she's always hanging out at my side. So it's Stretch's daughter, right, and he doesn't have full custody of her, and he's trying to get sober, and she's off with her mom all the time, and her mom married somebody new. Well, this guy, we're shooting hoops one day, and this guy, this new husband, he killed her mom and left these crazy fucking notes all over the house and had this plan that when she came home from school, he was going to kill her. It's in all the notes. And on a miracle, man, she was walking home from school, and the neighbor felt something weird. You know, just felt something weird. Like, I don't know if they'd heard something. I don't know why. They stopped her on her way home, and they brought her into the house, and they just kind of held her there for the day. You know, they couldn't explain it afterwards even, right? So she never got home, so the guy just killed himself, right? Nice. So he was gone. But, you know, so there is evil in the world. I have to tell you that. We have to watch out a little bit. Watch out for each other, right? It's that dark path where we were all on. Any one of us maybe could have ended up there doing those kinds of things. I have like 15 years of sobriety, and I'm living in this opera house that I've bought because I have some money together, right? I don't know. You do wild things when you follow that voice, I'm telling you. Yeah. So he calls me at 2 in the morning, and he, you know, we had been shooting hoops. He had gone off to do something else. He'd been out really late, and he calls me at 2 in the morning, and he says, PJ, you know, my kid is sitting here. He's not had full custody of her before. My kid is sitting here, and, you know, she's been in the police station all day, and her mom has been killed, and this guy, you know, they don't even know where he is yet. And you know, he's like, I don't know what to do. You know, can you come down here? We're like best friends, you know? It's 2 in the morning, man. I remember it's one of the two times in AA that I just was struck to my knees. Like, that can happen. You know, people talk about that. It can happen. You just like fall to your knees. And I just said, whatever higher power, you got to walk us through this. You got to help me help this kid. I don't care what I have to do. I want to help this kid. So I got on my clothes so fast. I can remember the kind of energy that was like coursing through my body. And I ran down the street. He lived down the street from me. And I, you know, they were sitting in the dark. He's sitting in the dark with a stereo on, a little blue light. And I just sat there with him, you know. Shit. So for that whole summer, you know, I just took her to the pool. We had to protect her from the press, you know. I have this long-term sobriety, right? And this weird shit, like, how could this be happening to me? What does this mean? What's up with my higher power? Like, how could this happen to anybody? What about this kid? How could this happen to this kid, right? So I helped raise her for like 7 years, and we married. He was the second guy. I married in AA. You know, it just seemed right, and it was like, you know, there's something about my butchness that I did have that tendency to try to take care of people. I think I was trying to use that love to help somebody, you know, get sober. He really couldn't get it together, this guy. And after about 7 years together, he told me he didn't love me, that he'd married me because he knew my daughter really loved his daughter. His daughter really loved me. Then it got things turned, you know, and he got really mad, and he didn't like that we had this close relationship, and he said something like, you know, if you keep coming around, I know she calls you mom, and she already lost a mom, you know. He said, but if you keep coming around, I'm going to tell people that you're a dyke, and that she was threatened, you know, you were a threat to her. So I'm really, like, confused about my higher power right at this point, right? So this is where I learned something else about spirituality. My God, and maybe your God, can do this too. He's so big. It's so big. It can take all my anger. You know, I was pissed at my higher power. And I believe my higher power would rather have me say, fuck you. Fuck you. What are you fucking doing here? How can there be a world like this? You know, I think my higher power wants that from me, not some fake like, oh, well, I'm 17 years sober, so I better share for the newcomer. I better share some spiritual thing that everybody, it is spiritual sometimes to say fuck you to God. It is, because you know what? I was still talking to God. I was still talking to my higher power. It's wild. All through writing my dissertation, which I just ended in like May, all through trying to write that novel, I kept saying, I can't figure it out. I can't get these pieces to come together. I can't figure it out. Am I supposed to be doing this? Why did you lead me down this path? What is happening here? And I keep going back and working really hard on it. And it's like, it's not coming together. What the hell are you doing? That's the relationship I have with my higher power, you know? Then it's also like something beautiful, like this morning when I'm like getting ready to come over here and I'm thinking, oh, it's 9 o'clock. Like, I guess I better get over there, but I'm not really exactly sure what I should do. And I call a guy that I've been working with a lot who's also really going to be hard to leave. You know, I call Sloan up and he's like, oh, I'm meeting somebody over, Jacob, over at the coffee shop, and we're going to grab a coffee before. So I don't have to go to the park alone and do some pseudo-spirituality thing, some kind of Tai Chi in the park or whatever. You know, I can go to the coffee shop where we always hang out and be with two guys who I love, you know, and who are in AA and are laughing and acting funny and dancing up on me and, you know, talking about funny stuff. And that's my higher power. My higher power does these crazy ways of answering me that are really, really amazing. So I feel like I must be getting towards the end of my time here. Am I? What time is it?
You just keep going forever.
It's afternoon, so it is. Yeah, we're at the end here. And I don't want to keep you guys too long because I know you're all sleepy and everything. But you have to go home now, right? We have to go home to our home groups. Like, you got a home group, I hope. If you don't have a home group, you need to get a home group. That's part of spirituality for us, you know? So get a home group. If you don't have a sponsor yet, you know, you need to start listening in the meetings and find somebody you can really share with, you know, not just somebody who has what you want, but somebody you can, like, really share with. They don't have to be like you. A lot of my sponsors have been the crazy, happy types, right, that are really, like, exuberant. That's beautiful, and it balances me perfectly. And I think I'm doing something for them, maybe, too. My sponsees, like I said, do so much for me, like, teach me so much. It's amazing. So you go home, you get, you know, you go back to your home group. Like, remember not to yell out all the time or you'll be ostracized. In case you're new, you know, you might think that's the way it is all the time, but probably people will, like, look at you and say, oh, cool, what are you doing? You can do that here, right, next year. And what am I trying to say? Try to hang on to the fact that you saw some people here who were like you, right? Who were young like you, and who got through all those hurdles, who didn't give up and think it was cool to drink again. You know what? Something changed inside me. I maybe had a couple years of sobriety, and I realized, like, you know what? My fucking heroes now are like Chain Charlie, who, you know, who, like, the gay guy with all the chains around his neck, who's got, you know, 17 years of sobriety at the time. That guy is my hero, you know? Or, like, old Harry, who's, like, he's, like, covered with, like, speckles. You know, people have to bring him to meetings. And all he says over and over again are, you know, don't drink, go to meetings, pray to God, let things happen. Or he says, his other big one was, eagles fly with eagles, crows fly with crows. And in case you were thinking you were the eagle, you got it all wrong, or something like that. You know, we're like, we're the crows, you know. You know, when no one came in here on the wings of glory, you know, those kinds of things. That guy, like, saved my life, you know. So it's those people, too. When you go home, sit down next to those old people. You don't have to talk to them. You don't even have to tell them why. They're your secret sponsor, you know. Sit down next to those guys. So I, you know, thank you for asking me to speak here. I think it probably did more for me to enable me to say goodbye. I originally had a flight out on last Thursday, and when they asked me to speak here, I changed the flight because I wanted to be here so bad. You know, I wanted to be here and share with you so bad. It just felt like too cosmic to pass up, you know? So thank you for helping me say goodbye. Saying goodbye is really hard, you know? And we learn to do it more gracefully, I think, as we get sober. We learn to say goodbye. Now we have, like, Facebook and shit, so we can see each other, which is good. Thanks, you guys.